just that visual cue of the heels and the hair and the 3+ hours of makeup. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it because it reminds us that we need to create space for healing and for hope and for celebration, right? And yes, about what we don't want, which is sexual violence and harm. We can't just say what we don't want. Let's also talk about what we do want. What is the world we want to live in? Let's talk about sexual health. Let's talk about healthy relationships and what those look like, not just what the red flags are, but what do green flags actually look like, right? And that's, I think, some of the discourse we're seeing, even online now, people talking about green flags, which even again, 10, 20 years ago, like wasn't as much of a cultural conversation. And so UNITA, I think through the color and the glam and the sparkle, really just instinctively invites people into this conversation, which can be really challenging, in a more comfortable way. It makes it a little bit more approachable. And people get excited by a drag queen about these kinds of things, which is amazing to see how much more mainstream drag has become. So really, drag has been just one more tool to welcome people into the conversation, right? It makes a sort of easier access point into the conversation, and it sort of starts the conversation from an inherently strengths-based kind of focus, right? On healthy relationships, on celebrating ourselves.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So building on your point about space and practice, I'd love to learn more about the wider community context. So in your professional experience, how does community involvement impact an individual's healing process, especially after trauma or violence? Or what role do you think the community that you spoke about plays in creating the safe space for healing and justice for all members of our society?
Yeah, so when I think about the experience of someone on campus who's maybe experienced sexual violence, that person might find a variety of things helpful, right? It's going to differ person to person on the context. Maybe it's an academic, maybe it's a connection to therapy. But again, going back to beyond like intellectualizing issue, there are some like core human needs here, right? If someone's been harassed on campus, they might just feel uneasy even walking around, leaving their dorm room, going to get food, walking to class, right? Inherently, like being in the way of what they're there for, to learn, to study, to grow. And so I think building connection through community just makes people feel safer, right? Whether that's more formalized peer support services. And I know most of our campuses have these kinds of peer support services that exist maybe under the student union, which are so amazing and so critical, or just making friends through a student club, whatever it is, but just walking around and having a sense of community, literally just saying hello to people as you're walking from place to place, or having someone who you can go with to class or to go get food, can make someone feel a lot safer in that space. I'm also reminded of this scene from Sex Education. I can't remember what season it was or if you've seen it, but there's a great scene which takes place a while after one of the characters experiences a sexual assault on a bus and is uncomfortable and feeling unsafe to even go back onto this bus again after that experience, of course. And there's a scene where a bunch of the women characters, all go on with her, and one of them says, "It's just a bus." And like, it just shows we're all here for you, and they all get on the bus together. And it just is such a tearjerker and really just demonstrates the power of community, I think, in that moment. So I'm gonna do a pitch for the TV show Sex Education for anyone who's not watched it, because it's got so many beautiful moments. And that was one that really stood out to me.
Yes, I have seen it. I watched it because from the X-Files to Sex Education, the character, she plays a really, really cool role. And also in it, also the blurs between races too, right? Because they're all youth, they're all high school students and whatnot. And I think it plays it shows powerfully how all different backgrounds can come together for healing even after that incident from the bus. And yeah, really, really do enjoy that series. In a different context, in All About Love, bell hooks argues that men are both harmed by patriarchy and may also commit harm. So from your perspective, what is needed for men to heal from the harms of patriarchy and toxic masculinity?
Yeah, I absolutely love that book. It's one that I quote and refer to quite often. I think the first piece is recognizing that patriarchy causes harm to all of us, and that includes men, and understanding patriarchy as a system and not as representative of men. So that's like the starting point for a lot of guys, because so many of us approach when we hear patriarchy and feminism, we think of men versus women. And obviously, there's more complexity with gender beyond that, but it's also not this person versus that person. That's not what it's about. I think back to inactivity when I was at the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region, there was this training that I'm pretty sure is still done with the Ontario Hockey League. I think it was called OHL Onside. And a bunch of the sexual centers around Ontario work with their regional hockey teams and do these workshops around sexual violence. And there was an activity at the end that I really loved, and it was called Strongest Man. And we would do it after we did this man box activity. So what is a man supposed to be like, look like, jobs are they supposed to have, et cetera? What happens when men go outside this box? And we kind of define that man box. And then we do the Strongest Man activity, and people share in pairs who's the strongest man in their life, and then come together as a group, and folks can share what they're comfortable with. And as people share who the strongest man in their life is and why, even though we just did that man box activity, most of the guys define the strongest man not by physical strength, by emotional strength, right? And so we already, I think, are aware of what healthy masculinity can look like when we think of those like ideal examples of strong men in our lives. Really interestingly, there was one guy who I can remember said that the strongest man in his life was actually his mother, and he wanted to use her as an example. And I thought that was brilliant because really, at the end of the day, healthy masculinity is just like healthy personhood, healthy humanity. Like it's just about being a good person, right? And embracing all those elements that we ascribe to maleness or masculinity or femaleness or femininity, and recognize that those are all part of being a good human and part of being a good man, right? Because there's not really an answer I could say what it means to be a good man that wouldn't apply to people of other genders. And so I think it's just really about embracing all of those different elements of strength, physical and emotional and spiritual, and embracing all of those pieces within ourselves. Yeah.
Thank you for that nuanced take on healing and masculinity and accountability as well too, right? That masculinity is also based on emotional strength. That it's not about us versus others, right? But it's about the humanity or the humanness in all of us. So your perspective on men's healing opens up a broader question I'd like to ask, especially for folks beginning their own journeys in healing. So what words of guidance would you offer to someone who wants to begin the process of healing but isn't sure how to start?
I would say a few things. I would say if you want to begin the process of healing and you're not sure where to start, you've already started. So there's that part of you that's already advocated for yourself to seek out help in some way. So like that's already amazing. A lot of people downplay their experiences of harm and think that it's not that bad. There's a great book called Not That Bad, edited by Roxane Gay, which is brilliant. Downplaying their experiences is not that bad. The other people have had it worse. And so who am I to access, free therapy from the local sexual assault center or use the resources that I have available to me on campus when I know resources are limited and other people, quote, have had it much worse than I have, right? And so people like tell those stories to themselves. And I think partly that can also be a protective mechanism because it can be really hard to admit to ourselves that someone has violated our bodies, our autonomy, our trust. So I understand that that's a very nuanced thing and complex, and there's a lot of pieces there. I would say it's okay to not know what the entire path is going to look like. You're just not going to know what it's going to look like. It's going to change. It's not going to be linear at all. There's going to be, there's going to be feelings of going sort of quote back to, earlier stages of harm, but know that that's not the case, right? When we go, we're growing around that harm. And again, just knowing that it's not going to be linear, I think is a really helpful thing. And knowing that it's okay to ask for help. So often people don't want to feel like a burden on someone else. And again, we know, campus resources, community resources are limited. And so we don't want to be a burden or take up space from someone else. And just know that it is absolutely okay to ask for help and just start small. So find that one person you can trust who has demonstrated their trust to you that you know is going to respond in a supportive way. And maybe it means asking them to just be in the room when you call a support line, or just walk you to that office on campus to your appointment to get support the first time. And again, it just kind of ties back to the community healing piece we talked about. You don't have to go through this alone.
That's amazing. I really appreciate how accessible and compassionate your advice is on how we can start to think about healing, right? Even when we're unsure of where to start, unsure of what that journey may look like, that it's not linear, and that it's okay to ask for help. You've named such important starting points, thinking about broader communities of care. So the question for you is, healing often becomes a communal act in queer marginalized communities. What practices or values from these communities can guide us in building more collective approaches to healing?
Such a great question. Speaking from the queer